runasradio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 120 with guest Phil Peary, recorded Monday, July 13th, 2009. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. You're listening to Run As Radio. With me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
That's me. Hey, Richard.
Hi, sir. How are you?
I'm doing... Actually, life is hectic, but I'm doing okay.
Yeah, well, better not being busy.
I'm getting married, and I've never done that before, and...
Congratulations, man. That's good news.
Yeah, thanks. It's, yeah, it's interesting. It's exciting. It's exciting, but it's tough.
Yeah. When you only want to do it once.
Best part is that last night, we're at somebody else's wedding, an outdoor wedding, which ours is planned to be an outdoor wedding in the fall, and it rained.
Yeah.
And so she's like, maybe we should get married in your church. I already put $1,000 down on the outdoor wedding place. No, we can have the reception there.
All right, Greg. Well, let's introduce Phil Peary again. He was on the show just a couple of weeks ago. So if you want to hear his whole bio, you can listen to that show.
Yeah, we don't need to read it again. He's a good guy.
I know when we talked about 64-bit computing, there was a whole bunch of other topics we wanted to get into, and I just wanted to get straight to that. Welcome back, Phil.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Things are good. Yeah.
Doing well.
Yeah. No rest for the wicked, that's for sure. When we talked a few weeks back, we talked about 64-bit computing, and we talked a little bit about Active Directory, and I thought we'd come back and sort of drill into AD. And this is part of the work that you do as in PFE?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Active Directory is a big big part of, well, it's one of the areas of specialties for me. So every customer I go to, it's part of the work.
So do you find, does AD that much pain these days? I thought it just worked.
Yeah, it's really, a lot of the stuff that I do for customers now is going in and talking about the new features of Windows 2008 Active Directory and the upcoming 2008 R2 release, right? So
sure.
Most of our customers are running 2003 Active Directory and running it fairly well, fairly stably, right? Some people have some, you know, work they need to do on improving the performance because replication performance from a site topology perspective and things like that. But by and large, that's true. Active Directory does just run and runs very well.
Is it a size thing when you start having these replication problems? Like where does the size of AD become a problem?
Actually, there's really not a theoretical limit to the size of the Active Directory database. It's only really limited by anymore, especially with 64-bit domain controllers. It's really only limited anymore to the size of the physical disk you can provide for the database, right? So, in some cases, we have customers that have Active Directory databases that are just gigs and gigs and gigs in size and holding millions and if not billions of objects. Now, most customers, of course, aren't, you know, don't get directories that big. It's only the great big huge companies that do that. But from that perspective, you know, nobody's really kind of hit those limits yet.
Yeah, when you say it's just limited to disk space, I think 1.5 terabyte drive.
Okay.
Let me just
you could get an Active Directory database to fill that drive. You could create enough objects in an Active Directory database to fill that size. It would take some time, granted, right? But it would absolutely work.
And you really wouldn't want to replicate it, though.
Well, you know, one of the things about Active Directory replication is you're not replicating the entire database. It's not like you're replicating the ntds.dit file, which is the Active Directory database. You're not actually physically copying that file from domain controller to domain controller. You're only replicating the objects and attributes that change within that directory.
Right, just the deltas.
Right? So it's not like a, you know, a 1.5 terabyte chunk of replication, right?
Right.
Unless, of course, you've got that Active Directory database is that big and you promote a new domain controller, then, of course, you've got to replicate that entire database for that first time to the new DC. But anything after that, you know, it's just changes. It's just the deltas to the database get replicated. So from that perspective, it's a very efficient operation. Now, to replicate that you know, 1.5 terabyte Active Directory database the first time, if you do it over the network, that can be, you know, fairly slow, right? So we have we have a feature called Install for Media, where you can actually take a snapshot of your current Active Directory database, and instead of, you know, doing the initial replication over the wire, you can actually use that backup of your Active Directory, copy it, you know, burn it to a CD or to a tape or what have you, and move it locally to that new domain controller and promote it from that source instead of replicating it over the wire. Actually, Install for Media, one of the reasons why it was created was specifically for that purpose. So once that database is up and live on that new machine, it then just, you know, starts talking to the other DCs in the environment. And again, we're just replicating the deltas, the changes to the directory at that point. And as I said, it is, you know, most Active Directory objects are fairly small, attributes are fairly small in size and replicate very quickly.
So if I have a new domain controller, say in a new data center that I want to bring up for the first time, I can burn that CD or DVD, ship it over there, load it up, probably has a serial number, date, timestamp type thing on there, and then it'll just start replicating the deltas since it was created?
Yeah, so what happens is during the DC promo process, right, instead of, and this is something you can do with 2003, but it's much enhanced and improved in 2008. Mm-hmm. When you do that DC promo process, instead of saying, you know, replicate from DC 304, replicate from this Install for Media set, right, that
gotcha,
I have local
gotcha.
on the machine, right? And then we do that initial database build from that source. Once that's complete, we establish a connection to our domain controllers through the Active Directory site topology, and then we begin our normal, you know, object and attribute replication from there. It's actually a very efficient way of bringing up a new database, a new domain controller with a
sure.
really big database.
Yeah, maybe kind of a random or tangent of a question here, but it kind of hinging off of last week's show. Do you run across, because you're going into, you know, a lot of different customers and sites that are been running Active Directory for a long time. Do you still run across Active Directories that are in 2000 mode or haven't even gone to a 2003 native mode? Do you still run across that?
Actually, just recently. Pretty funny, yeah. Funny that you asked that question. Actually, just recently, I went to a customer who had a root domain and a couple of child domains, and one of the child domains was still 2000. It was only two domain controllers, but it was 2000 DCs.
Yeah.
And of course, that was a big red flag because Windows 2000 is no longer supported.
Sure.
So we had to, you know, work with them to get that, you know, those OSs upgraded and those domain controllers running on a new Active Directory. But I bump into more member servers running Windows 2000 than I do domain controllers, though. You know, you get the customer that's running a customized application that refuses to run on anything new, so they're kind of keeping it, you know, limping along on the old box until they can get the app upgraded. That's a little more frequent than actually domain controllers. So, but it does happen on occasion.
Yeah, every so often you find an NT4 box stashed in the back too, right?
Yeah, and occasionally a Windows 95 machine too. Isn't that scary? Yeah.
A story of the old NT4 domain controller that got drywalled in between when they took one room that was a quote unquote data center and made it into two offices, and in the drywall there was some machine running that had to be chopped back out. You know.
Yeah.
And if it's still alive now, it's never going to die. So,
yeah, and you know, a lot of those machines are like that. You know, NT4 especially
oh, yeah.
was extremely stable and very reliable. You know, from an uptime perspective, it would just run and run and run. So, yeah, you run into that on occasion.
Well, the a company I worked at, you know, as a startup, had an NT4 domain controller, the downstairs domain controller, so to speak, and it was in a closet, and it got covered up by marketing crud, basically boxes and boxes of stuff that got stacked around it. Nobody knew that machine was there, and it sat for, I don't know, a year and a half or 2 years under all those boxes, just doing its job, sitting there doing just fine until somebody finally tried to go and say, hey, wait, there's a domain controller there. Where is that thing? And it took a while to find it, but they found it, and there was, it was hot, but it was sitting under there running.
Do you see many folks using Core to run AD?
Actually, it's one of the things that I kind of push. I've only had one customer that actually had deployed it, but I think it's an excellent solution, right? So the idea is with Windows Core is, you know, we reduce the footprint and the memory utilization by removing all of the GUI components from the operating system. Okay. You know, you get a machine that will typically run, you know, faster with less amount of memory. It's easier to manage because there's fewer binaries on it, you know, all that jazz. And as a result, you put a service on it like Active Directory, Directory Services, and it just runs great. It just runs like a champ, especially again on a 64-bit machine.
Yeah.
Again, one of the things that I like to strongly suggest to all the customers that I go to, one of the things that I do a lot of lately, as I mentioned, is I go in and I do these chalk talks on Windows 2008 and Windows 2008 R2. And this is actually one of the things that I actually do a virtual demo of, is I sit down and we do a DC promo of a Core box and we run Perfmon on it and, you know, see how the memory is utilized and all that. And it's actually, a lot of people get interested by it when they actually see it firsthand like that. Actually, two of the DCs that I run in my home lab, two of the three DCs that I run in my home lab are running on Windows 2008 Core. Runs great.
Did you generally look, when you run Core, you run it as a virtual machine? I haven't seen any bare metal Core machines.
You can. One of the other advantages of, you know, if you run a Hyper-V, right, a Hyper-V machine, and then you do your guest OSs as Core, that's one way to do it. But right now, my two physical domain controllers are, they're physical, rather. They're running Core in their physical boxes. So you can do it either way, right?
Yeah, I'd like to point out that Phil just said two domain controllers in his home lab.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Well, I have two Core and one Windows. Yeah, so I actually have three DCs in my home lab.
Three DCs in his home lab. So we're we're hitting ultimate geek here. This is what we're doing.
Yeah, I get accused of that.
What else do you run in your home lab, Phil? Tell us.
Okay, so I have my three domain controllers. I have a Hyper-V box that is running a two-node cluster. File and print services and running a SQL server for just so I can, you know, play with it and kick the tires. Uh-huh. And I have about, one, two, three, well, when my work laptop is connected to the network, I have, five, Windows 7 machines, you know, desktop OSs, you know, between my son's, my wife's, and my personal desktop. So yeah, I got a pretty good load of boxes. The electric company loves me.
Yes, but have you ever been rated as a grow op? Because
Richard just built a new house.
Now we because of the data center, the rack space in here, we consume too much power at night, and we actually had the police show up thinking we were a marijuana grow operation, and we had to show
Wow! Wow! Yeah. No, that's never happened to me. My basement office is the warmest room in the house during the winter, though.
Yeah, I can see that. Again, we're back to this whole thing of, isn't Active Directory just plumbing? I find the UI for Active Directory is a problem. Like, it's hard to do certain things, you know, any detailed configuration. And I'm sort of battling whether, is this actually an Active Directory problem? Is this just a classic permissions group type problem?
So give me an example. I'm curious because, well, one of the things that we've done with 2008 is we've, you know, one of the big complaints prior to 2008 is along those lines. Yeah, it's hard to, you know, you have to run this MMC, you've got to run that. There's no unified tool, right? So within 2008, we've implemented Server Manager, which unifies all of those tools under one console, and has provided some enhancements to the existing tools, and has really improved the management experience considerably. So specifically, what kind of issues, you know, are you referring to?
So I'll tap Mark Manassi's complaint in the previous show, which was, if you want to have multiple password policies, so you have a, you know, group of power users and they have to change their password more frequently than the sort of typical user, you're right down to the bare metal ADSI edit to make that happen.
Yeah, that's what you're talking about is fine-grained password policy.
Right.
And it's a new feature in 2008 and 2008 R2. And he's absolutely correct. The initial release of fine-grained password policy is a little tough to implement and to manage. One of the things that I'm kind of hoping we're going to see with R2 is we're going to see a GUI tool or maybe a PowerShell applet or something like that that will take care of that. Not really sure 100% where that's at, but yeah, you are correct. Fine-grained password policies can be tough.
So is this one of those things where Microsoft, somebody decided, hey, you know, this feature is important enough, we need to get it out even though we don't have the matching fancy UI, even though you do have to get low level to make these changes? It's worth that.
Yeah, something along those lines. And also the new enhancements to audit policy are also similarly limited from the GUI. It's a command line only type of interface. So yeah, there are a couple of things that you know, do need to, you know, get a better interface, you know, and I believe will in the near future. I think when 2008 R2 comes out, we'll start to see some enhancements there. And plus the PowerShell guys just generate great PowerShell applets to do that kind of thing anyway. So
right.
We'll probably see something from them as well.
Now, you mentioned audit policy. Why don't you talk about what's new in audit policy in 2008 R2?
Right now, audit policy in 2003 is, you know, fairly limited, right? You know, you can get access to the directory. You can get log on, log off, that kind of stuff. The big enhancement to the audit policy in 2008 is the ability to audit changes to the directory. Okay, we have a whole range of event IDs for auditing changes, adds, deletes, modifies to any object in Active Directory, which is something that has been needed for a long time. That's really the big thing there.
It's a big deal for people that have, you know, compliance efforts, that, you know, regulatory efforts that they have to show evidence, you know,
exactly,
of compliance. I mean, the changes that have been made do make the amount of information that's available to the auditor or to the reviewer a lot more useful.
Yes, exactly. You know, one of the limitations, you know, like I said, is, you know, something gets changed in an OU or, you know, an attribute gets changed that affects an application, that kind of thing. You know, in earlier versions of Active Directory, it was really hard to audit and trace back where that change was made. And that's where the new policy changes to auditing fill that gap completely, right? You know, as I said, I'm looking for the event ID ranges for you really briefly, but any change, any move of an object or an attribute, any deletion, creation, of course, are fully audited now, right down to the user ID and IP address of the workstation where the change was made from. So really great stuff there. You know, any auditor, you know, anybody that has to interface with an auditor is going to really love these new features. So.
But even beyond that, just recovery from that, up until now in Active Directory, if you accidentally deleted an organizational unit, you're screwed. Like, restoring that is a nightmare.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, because, first of all, if the person who didn't actually delete it doesn't fess up right away and say, oops, I accidentally deleted this. You know, if it's on a Friday afternoon, how are you going to know right away, you know, until, you know, maybe people start logging in against that OU and can't. So, yeah, so this provides you with not only an audit trace source, but also as a potential source to monitor changes to your directory.
Sure.
Which is a really good thing.
Well, yeah, the I'm going to presume the best intentions of the guy. He didn't realize he deleted it.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
But the guys who are already logged in, they keep functioning. It's not until Monday when they, you know, kind of try to log back in again. And then they submit it as a bug. It takes a long time for you to finally trace all the way back to the fact that you lost that OU. But
yes.
How do you, step me through the process of how you get it back. I know in R2, we get undelete. But before that, you know, here I am in a happy 2003 R2 environment. How do I get that OU back?
Well, actually, you're talking about relying on your system state backups, right, at that point, right? So hopefully everybody out there is doing system state backups, right? So basically what you have to do is you have to, first of all, identify the OU that's been deleted, and you have to go to your most recent system state backup and do a reboot a domain controller in directory services restore mode and recover that guy that way using NT backup. And that's the 2003 methodology.
You have to restore the whole system state to do that. You can't just go get this OU.
The one OU.
No, you can. Well, if you use third-party tools, you can go get the one OU. And using a non-authoritative restore, you can recover an OU.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going back to yesterday's backup or the day before's backup or whatever it is, and any changes that you've made since then, you lose those.
Yes. Well, you're going to have to, if the OU has been deleted, you're going to have to do that anyway. Now, one of the cool things in 2008 is you can, of course, mark those OUs as undeletable. You can go in and check them and say, you know, protect from delete, which is also one of those cool little features that have been asked for a long time.
Right, but they do have to be marked as they have to be marked specifically as undeletable in order to be able to do that. So you have to do that ahead of time, right?
Well, and it gets back to when is an OU designated to be deletable, right? Like what?
Yeah, usually you know the OU structure, you know, put in place, of course, for the administrators to manage the environment. You know, once you get your layout kind of, you know, your OU layout, you know, canned and the way you like it, yeah, you should never really have to delete that, right? Unless, of course, there's a corporate change or a kind of structural change within the organization. But yeah, that's absolutely correct. Once they're in place, we very rarely see, you know, the need to delete or move an OU. Also, one of the reasons why we implemented that checkbox that says, you know, protect from delete.
Do you find that Active Directory running with Exchange is quite a bit of different beast from Active Directory without?
No, not really. Not really. Because Exchange is really a consumer of LDAP services, right?
Right?
You know, of course, it does its own thing, you know, with you know, email. But and actually, from my experience, it's actually one of the biggest consumers of Active Directory LDAP services from an application perspective. So, you know, I personally find it doesn't really change the way AD runs at all. Now, you certainly have to plan your AD infrastructure accordingly if you're going to be deploying Exchange, right, especially the newer versions of Exchange because we, you know, we rely more on site topology than we used to for Exchange, you know, it's definitely, you know, Active Directory is still Active Directory underneath it. You know, and you do, of course, have to do some schema extensions to support Exchange as well, which is a lot of customers are nervous about, but it's really a fairly straightforward process.
Yeah, I just find that once you've got Exchange in the loop, your AD is much bigger.
Oh, yeah, well, we'll cause some growth, absolutely, because we're adding a whole bunch of objects and attributes to the directory, so it does certainly grow.
Yeah, it uses AD in a way that I don't think any other application uses AD the way that Exchange does.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do believe that Exchange is the biggest, like I said, the biggest consumer of LDAP services that we see. You know, there are some other consumers of LDAP, you know, the PeopleSoft type applications, and Cisco Unity can use Active Directory, but certainly Exchange is the biggest one.
So, Phil, any favorite stories of Active Directory scares that we could share with the listeners?
Favorite stories of Active Directory scares. You guys all know that we utilize Kerberos as our authentication engine for Active Directory, correct?
Right.
As such, Windows Time is a fairly important component of Active Directory.
Sure.
In Active Directory, we have a limit for the amount of time skew that can exist between two domain controllers. In other words, if domain controller A has a time of 10 o'clock and domain controller B, his time is greater than in either direction, plus or minus 5 minutes difference on that domain controller where the time is plus or minus 5 minutes difference, Kerberos will stop authenticating users on that DC, because Kerberos, after that time skew, can't verify whether or not the Kerberos ticket granting ticket has been spoofed or you know, stolen or what have you, right? And that's actually part of the MIT standard for Kerberos. So one of the things that I've run into is I had a customer who had a number of domain controllers in the East Coast of the U.S. and a couple of domain controllers in the U.K. And one of the domain controllers in the U.K. had become compromised, and the customer believed it was from an internal source. And one of the things that happened was the time of the domain controller was set back 2 years, right? This was late 2007, and the time was set back to 2005.
Wow.
Right? And of course, as soon as that happens, that domain controller stops authenticating users.
Sure.
But Active Directory continues to run. And over a period of time, it caused enough issues within replication, within timestamps on records and things like that, that when they corrected the time of the domain controller, when they found it and corrected the time of the domain controller and brought it back in sync with the rest of the environment, the fact that it had a whole bunch of bad timestamp to Active Directory caused Active Directory replication to fail environment-wide across about 45 domain controllers.
Ouch.
Within about 2 hours, replication had completely ground to a halt. It took us about 18 hours to get the replication back up and running again. So I was on site Father's Day, no less, that year, with this customer, trying to get their environment back up and working, which we were able to do, you know, without any, loss of data. So that's one of my big war stories, actually.
At a high level, what's the process of fixing that look like?
From a high level, what we essentially had to do was we had to, first of all, verify that time, environment-wide was stable. And then to correct the Active Directory replication issue, we basically had to go in and recreate basically all the replication connection objects. And in a couple of cases, we actually had to rebuild site links, because with this old replication, with this old time date stamp being set, some of the site links were completely corrupted. On
sure.
top of that, because it was a 2-year interval, we also had to do some scanning of the directory for lingering objects as well.
Gotcha.
And we actually had to do some lingering object cleanup as well. So it was a tough one, and it took a lot of time to correct.
Just thinking about time across an organization, for people that are running large Active Directories or even decent sized Active Directories, do you generally recommend that they have an internal, atomic clock synced time server? Do you find that generally helps, or are there other ways to do it? I know that if I've had, for example, not to bash, but if I have to rely on time.windows.com, I've got nothing to rely on.
Yeah, I have a couple of favorites that I like. Tick and Talk .usno is a good one. One of the, the military ones. I used to really like the Atomic Clock in Boulder, Colorado as a highly reliable time source, but I don't think they allow free public NTP access anymore. I think you actually have to pay for that service. One of the other options is they make these NTP services. It's a little device, and you run an aerial up through your roof, and it gets time from GPS satellites. That's also a really good solution, and it's fairly inexpensive. I think they're under $1,000.
Yep.
And also, if you have a highly reliable router on your internal network, that's also another option as well. But the thing in regard to Windows that's important, in regard to Active Directory that's important, is that the Forest Root PDC emulator in the root domain, if you have a parent-child domain structure, he's the only guy that has a time type of NTP, and he's the guy that's configured to point to that reliable time source, right? Every other domain controller, member server, and workstation should have a time type of NT5DS. And that basically says for that particular device, get my time from the Active Directory hierarchy, right? Get my time from the domain controller where I established my secure channel connection to, right?
Sure.
That way, we have one authoritative time source at the top of the pyramid, and you know it filters down to everybody else. That's from a Windows perspective. That's what we like to see from a best practice perspective.
Well, that's good to know. I know several times I can think of where I've seen creeping time on domain controller servers where that time creep over time has resulted in replication issues and pretty substantial problems. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a tough one to track down if you're not thinking Windows time, right?
Right. It's one of the very basic things you have to think of.
Yeah, there's actually a really good white paper on setting up Windows time available from Microsoft.com. You know, search on Win32 time service best practices, and you'll find it.
Cool.
But isn't the important part here to keep all the machines in sync? You don't actually have to have the right time. It's just that all the machines have to have the same time.
Consistent time.
Exactly, and that's the thing, right? So if you're pointing to an external time source, and your internet connection goes out, as long as everybody is using NT5DS and is using the Active Directory hierarchy, if the time drifts on that NTP server, that Forest Root PDC emulator, it's not too big of a deal because everybody's going to shift with him, right?
Right.
As long as everybody stays together, it's kind of like the school of fish theory, right? If everybody stays together, maybe, nobody will get eaten by a shark, that kind of thing. So, shifting a time drift as a group is not an issue. It's when you have a domain controller who starts to wander off on his own, maybe because the system clock on that domain controller's hardware is failing. That's where we start to have issues. Or if it's, of course, maliciously changed for, evil purposes.
Right. Phil, I think we're just about out of time. Any final words?
Actually, I like to encourage everybody to look at Windows 2008 and R2 when it becomes released and available later this year, hopefully later this year. Some great features, new features in R2. One of the ones we touched on very briefly, the recycle bin for Active Directory is great. That's a great feature. And as we also talked about, 64-bit domain controllers are a wonderful thing. And also think about core for your domain controllers. Right?
Phil Peary, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Pleasure.
Thanks, Phil.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.